This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hello and welcome to the latest in LGBTIQ+ health and policy, the podcast that brings you conversations with leading voices in LGBTIQ+ health and well-being. I'm your host, Triana Butler. Thanks so much for being here. Today, we're speaking with Jane Morley, the CEO of 2010, about the impacts of the social media ban on young LGBTIQ+ people. Drawing on 2010's frontline work, Jane reflects on what young people are saying in the wake of the ban, particularly the loss of connection, affirmation, and the access to trusted information at such a critical time of their lives. Jane shares a question raised by a young person that really cuts to the heart of the issue. Why are young people being punished for the actions of a minority who bully online while the enormous social media organizations themselves are not being required to take responsibility for the safety of their users? It's a really powerful conversation and explores how this sense of unfairness is compounding those feelings of exclusion and powerlessness that they're feeling, and why policy responses need better balance protection with participation, accountability, and care. The episode also looks at what meaningful alternatives can look like, including the importance of safe, well-moderated spaces actually designed with young people rather than just being imposed on them. Jane outlines how 2010 is responding and what young people need right now from governments, platforms, and the broader community. Now, as a heads up, this episode does discuss mentions of mental health concerns and suicide. With that in mind, here is my discussion with Jane Morley, the CEO of LGBTQIA+ youth support organization 2010. Jane, thanks so much for joining us today on The Latest.
Thanks, Triana. I'm so happy to be here.
Now, I know for a lot of LGBTIQ+ people, social media has been one of the few places that they've felt seen and less alone. You know, when you feel like you can't be yourself in the real world, but you have a community online who connects with you, that is a really incredibly special thing to hold on to. And now almost overnight, for a lot of people, that connection has been taken away. From what you've been doing with 2010, what have young people been telling you about how this is affecting them right now?
Thanks so much for that question. This ban certainly has been the talk of the country, and indeed, even this week, I had an assembly member from California reach out to me who's out here doing some research into a social media ban in the United States, and I think it's safe to say that the world is watching at the moment. We did take some time out a few months ago now, when the legislation was passed and we knew it was happening, we spent time with our youth advisory council called the Queer Leaders at 2010 and reached out to other young people in our networks to hear directly from them around, I guess, a range of, to gain their insight into the social media ban, how we could support them, what their thoughts and feelings were. And we received a lot of really interesting feedback, as is always the way when you, when you really embed the voice of young people in the work that you're doing, is where you get some of the richest insights and intel. And it really helps us do the work that we do at 2010. So some of the things that we heard from them, and I think in your question, you say now almost overnight that connection's been taken away. Interestingly enough, a lot of young people didn't know it was happening. It was like, oh, I've kind of heard about that. Is that for real happening? Oh, it's happening. And I think that really spoke to a feeling of the legislation being passed through quickly, a lack of consultation with, I think, communities who may be impacted more adversely than others. And then what could be perceived, and certainly is our experience, as a pretty fast implementation plan. So from legislation passed to implementation, it's moved really quickly. And I think that it's really important to acknowledge that some of the folks that have been really advocating for this social media ban have had some of the worst lived experience that you can. So young people in their lives dying by suicide as a result of interactions that they're having online. And I really just want to acknowledge the experiences of those families and the young people involved and just name that this is a complex issue. So we really heard from young people. At first, some of them didn't know about it. They didn't know it was happening. They were really fearful of what kind of information they were going to have to upload to these huge social media platforms. They were really worried that it would be a whole new level of data they would be uploading. They weren't sure where it was going to go. They weren't certain, of course, if, you know, as it is for young trans and gender diverse people, would their paperwork and their ID, you know, match their gender and their identity and their name that they're using IRL. So it came with a lot of confusion and not a lot of clear information was coming out around, I guess, the logistics of the implementation. So we heard a lot about that. And I guess in terms of safety and belonging, I think the data upload definitely speaks to safety. But in terms of belonging, there really has been a high level of stress, frustration, confusion, and some fear around further experiences of isolation and disconnection from their friends. And this is real for under 16-year-olds in our communities, but also in the kind of, you know, 17 to 19 age bracket, lots of young people feeling like, well, what if I'm not able to verify my ID? Am I going to be cut off too? So just, yeah, I think a general feeling of fear, confusion. And we've been really, as some of the information has come through from the eSafety Commissioner particularly, we've been able to support young people understanding what the ban means for them, what platforms are being impacted, what platforms are not included in the ban, and as much as possible, what sort of ID verification they're going to have to upload. And importantly, how to get their data down from those platforms, including, you know, precious photos, conversations, memories and moments, that data would be removed pretty swiftly. So helping them understand how to download all that data before the ban took place. So it's, I guess, as I mentioned at the start, it's a complex issue and it's the first of its kind in the world. And I've been you know, tuning in really closely to media commentary as well as the voices of young people over the last week, particularly the last couple of days. And I guess there is a feeling that it is inevitable that due to its swiftness and due to the size or the scale of this ban, that there will be lots of teething issues and that I'm sure the government expects it to not work in some ways and have the desired effect in others. But something that has been reaffirming is that we've been working with LGBTI Health Australia and we understand that the government acknowledge that there are some communities that may be more affected by this ban than others, and young LGBTIQA plus people, young people living in regional and rural Australia and remote Australia, and young people with disabilities are amongst some of those young folks that may be impacted more greatly than others. So we've been working with LHA and the government to sort of pass some of that information back up to government and pitch some ideas about what we could do to create other safe spaces for connection in response to this ban. And that's been a really great opportunity for 2010 to be able to have those conversations. And big thanks to LGBTI Health Australia for facilitating those conversations.
Well, on top of that fear and confusion that you mentioned, and as you say, there's a lot of people in regional and remote areas who are already incredibly isolated and struggling. What's your concern in terms of what happens next for them?
Well, I think there's some uncertainty about what happens next. And organisations like 2010, LGBTI Health Australia, Minus 18, Reach Out, Batia, there's lots of youth-focused organisations around the country that have been, scrambling. I mean, we've been prepared, but there has been a scramble, and I think that's part of the swiftness of this ban coming into place that's felt challenging to create other digital safe spaces or reactivate digital safe spaces that we created during periods like COVID, and really think about how do we ensure that young people know these spaces exist? So how do we communicate this broadly enough with that reach that we need? And interestingly enough, we have just seen a sort of grant round come around looking at some funding for building some in real life. It's called the IRL grant for young people, connective spaces around the country. So we'll be looking at putting an application in for that and looking at how we can use some existing infrastructure, in real life infrastructure around the country, and maybe partner with organisations in New South Wales such as ACON, who work regionally and rurally, to really perhaps build some more IRL spaces in regional and rural New South Wales. I guess something that we've been thinking a bit about is that there's just absolutely no denying that this ban will affect all young people under 16 who are on social media. But again, I think there's lots of young people that are going to be pretty grumpy, pretty pissed off, you know, but they might have, you know, a thriving friendship group at school or netball team or faith-based group of friends that they can connect with. There's lots of young people around Australia that might not have those networks so at their reach as other young people. And I think they're some of the folks that we're focusing on when we think about negative impacts of the social media ban. So at 2010, we've looked at implementing or re-implementing our Discord server and looking at a platform called Padlet. As well as when we spoke to young people about this, they said really, you know, they were like, can everyone please just make sure like their websites are up to date and their websites are mobile friendly? Which, you know, obviously we always aim for the website to be looking good and have all the information that you need on it. But I think it's kind of a wake up call to say, well, actually we are in a mobile era. How is everything looking? Is everything accessible that we're publishing on our website, easily accessible on mobile? So really just ensuring that all of our digital assets that we have are accessible and that young people know about it, no matter where they live. We've been having conversations with SchoolLink, who link school support staff around the state, ensuring that we've got flyers in schools, flyers in workplaces, shopping centres, libraries, other youth orgs, headspaces around the country, really disseminating that old school hard copy flyer so that, you know, with a QR code for our Discord, our website, our Padlet, and links to other national services such as QLife and others, just so that young people kind of wherever they look or land, if they're looking for this kind of information, they can get it without barrier.
It's a lot of creative thought that's gone into getting the message out there. I really appreciate that. Now, Jane, this policy is being framed as being about protection and about protecting the kids. You're on the front lines, though. You see this every day. You're across it with what you're doing at 2010. Does it actually feel protective to young people? Do they feel protected, or does it feel like something really important's been taken off them?
That's a great question. I'm very far away from being a young person anymore, but we have been talking to young people about this. Look, I think just zooming out a little bit, I think young LGBTIQA+ people in Australia often don't feel protected. And I think experiences online, particularly for young, vulnerable people, can often be fraught, as well as in real life experiences. So, you know, we've been doing that, you know, that reflection of in an ideal world, we'd be looking at what are the systemic causes of bullying? What can we be implementing in schools and in extracurricular youth spaces that give leaders, teachers, the time and the confidence to implement anti-discrimination and anti-bullying when it comes to LGBTIQA+ young people? Because, you know, everybody's time poor, things fly under the radar all the time, and there isn't a consistent, comprehensive LGBTIQA+ educational program that goes into schools in New South Wales. I can only speak from New South Wales perspective. So I think that we have been doing some reflection around, well, if only we could get some, you know, more foundational learning into young people's spaces so that we could decrease occurrences of bullying. If only we could hold these huge these huge international tech platforms to task. And, you know, if they could be compelled to ensure that their spaces are safer, you know, the world would feel more protective and safe for all young people, including young people from our communities. So I guess I just wanted to share that reflection, because protection, you know, protection is more broader reaching than social media. But coming back to the question, I do think young people are feeling like there was an avenue where they could connect with each other that is really swiftly being removed. It's being removed at a really pivotal time in a young person's life. It's almost the school holidays. It's Christmas time or holiday time. It's a time where you are extracted from peers and friends at school and in other spaces. You might be having more time with family, and that being a really difficult time as a young LGBTIQ plus person.
Exactly.
So the timing feels fraught and more high risk than I think if the implementation could have been kind of extended a little more. So I think that, in summary, I feel like lots of young folks don't feel protected in many ways, but they definitely do have really positive and affirming connection in social media spaces and online. And I'd like to think that, we know this, that young people can access life-saving, life-changing, really important mental health and health information online. They see other people that are like them. They hear from other people that are like them, that are having the same or similar experiences. And those interactions and connections do take place on some of these platforms that are being removed.
And I did see there was an interview with a young person on somewhere on one of the channels, and this kid's point was, if they can take the accounts of anyone who is under 16 years old away, then they can actually act on harassment and bullying and hate speech that is on their platform. It's probably easier for them to track that than it is to try and figure out who the 16-year-olds are. So where's the protection there?
Look, I couldn't agree more. What has been so fantastic over the last week is hearing all of these young voices on mainstream media sharing such well-articulated insights into their experiences and their thoughts and opinions. I spoke at an open day here on Gadigal land a week ago on this topic, and a young person said exactly the same thing. Their words were, "Why are we being punished? Why aren't the tech giants being held to account? This ban is actually directed at the wrong people." You know, and this person was maybe 13 or 14, and quite rightly pointed out that some of the platforms that aren't included can be quite unsafe spaces for young people. So there also seems to be, I think, some, arbitrary is not the right word, but I feel like definitely there's some great ideas around that. And the other thing, of course, is that young people are telling us, and I know it's emerging on TikTok as a trend already. I heard today there's an I'm still standing trend. what did people expect? Young folks that are a bit more tech savvy are letting their friends know, "I've got the workaround. I know what we're doing. This is how we're going to do it." They're saying it on mainstream media. It's unsurprising. I mean, this might be dating me, but remember Footloose, the movie where they banned dancing? I think that all the kids acted out. I think that we know that prohibition or censorship can have an adverse reaction. And I do hear young people feeling like they're being blamed or punished, where actually perhaps there would have been other mechanisms to make online spaces safe for everybody, ensure that hate speech, discrimination, bullying, harassment is eradicated. And why can't, with all the billions of dollars and all the tech tools in the world, why can't the focus be there?
You're listening to the latest in LGBTIQ plus health and policy from LGBTIQ plus health Australia. We are chatting with Jane Morley, the CEO of 2010, a leading organization supporting the safety, health and well-being of LGBTIQ plus young people across New South Wales. We are chatting about the social media ban that's come into place for under 16s. Now, Jane, for young people who don't feel safe or accepted at home, I mean, I know this is a real concern that's come up for a lot of people who are above the age of 16, for people who have been adults for a really long time. We know that having a space to go to where we're not being judged and we're not being targeted like that means the world, to be able to express yourself freely. And for a lot of these people, that's being taken away from them. That's also especially scary over the holiday season that's coming up. So how do these changes affect their day-to-day sense of safety, but also connection with the people around them that are building them up and encouraging them?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's a complex question. I don't know yet how these changes are affecting their day-to-day sense of safety and connection, particularly in response to this ban. But I guess what I do know a little more about is how creating safe spaces creates a sense of safety and connection, you know, with or without this ban in place. And I think that what's important right now is that young people understand that it's happening to everybody all at once. So they're not alone in this experience. They're not being targeted. It's something that they're all going to have to navigate together. And I think that there's some cold comfort, I want to say, as an expression in that we can be having this conversation together as a whole community, and that there's a really big chance that lots and lots of other young people around you in your life, at your school, wherever you're interacting with peers, are having a similar experience. I guess what's important is that young folks know that there are still platforms that aren't being affected by the ban. And we know particularly Discord is one that is used by LGBTIQ plus young people and people of all ages globally. And it's a great place for connection and gaming and facilitation. And organizations like our own and Minus 18 and others have Discord servers. Ours is a facilitated safe space. There's an intake process to enter our Discord server. So people sort of have different parameters on how to access that, but that there are other spaces that you can connect. So we really hope that young people understand that whilst certainly TikTok, Snapchat, Instagram and others are being removed, that there are still places that you can connect online. And I think right now what's important is that, yeah, young people understand that, and they also understand they're not alone, and that there are folks out there, peers out there that are ready to support them. And I would love to just mention QLife, which is a national anonymous free phone and instant messaging peer support service is open from 3 p.m. till 9 p.m. and the peers on the line are all LGBTIQ plus folks, are there to chat about how you're feeling, what you're experiencing, and so yeah, just that you're not alone.
Now, I am all across Discord. You keep mentioning Padlet, and I've never heard of Padlet before. What is Padlet?
It's funny you should say that, because I remember when COVID hit and we asked young people how they wanted to connect, and they said Discord, and I didn't know what Discord was. So it's like...
come and join the gamers over here at Discord. We're all having a great time.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy to say that was a few years ago. I'm across Discord now. But Padlet, 2010 started using Padlet a couple of years ago. It's an educational platform where you can build boards, and the boards have a sort of different look and feel. And there's one in particular that sort of looks and feels a bit like Instagram when you're looking at it on mobile. But we started using it as a way to pull together lots of really specific resources. So we have a board specific for trans and gender diverse young people and support services and resources. We've got one that features all in-person youth groups around New South Wales. So we started to build them to share with young people so they could get all the specific information they needed in one place rather than just an email with links. Also because it's got quite a nice visual look and feel. So when the ban was implemented, we thought, oh, well, this is a no-brainer. What's great about Padlet is that you don't have to log in. You only have to create an account if you want to interact, but you can just view information, pictures, etc. without logging in, so it's really accessible. So on the 2010 Padlet, we've built a board called QU, which is spelled Q with the word U, Y-O-W, which is an under 16 space. And so we've called it, it's like, welcome to QU, an online discussion board for young LGBTIQ plus folks under 16. It's, you know, you can be under 18, it's for anyone really, but it's focused for under 16 year olds because it's got information that we won't be sharing on our Instagram necessarily, but we'll share most things here on our Padlet, and we will be, it's like information about all of our programs and services, information about nationwide youth support services, particularly in response to this social media ban that young people can access, information about Q Life, and then hopefully we're looking at getting some extra funding, fingers crossed, where we might build a Padlet that becomes more interactive and young people can upload illustrations, memes, cute things, but we'll see how we go. But at the moment, it's just a really easy to access social media platform that I guess removes some of that more dense interactivity, commenting. It doesn't allow for videos. Oh, sorry, I'm wrong. It does allow for videos, but not carousels. And so I guess it's removing, doesn't allow for direct messaging. So it's removing some of those elements of some of these major social media platforms that have been banned because of that direct messaging element that's been so impactful for so many young people.
Well, if people want to know more about 2010 and all the work that you're doing there, where can they go? Where's the easiest place to find you?
Well, let's just send them directly to our website, 2010. So it's 20 the word, 10 the number, .org.au. We're on all social media platforms, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook. We've got the aforementioned Padlet, and you can find our information about our Discord server, which is called Hangout, on our website and on Padlet and any other social media that you can still access.
That you can still access. Very important little asterisk there. Jane Morley, thank you so, so much for joining us today on The Latest. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much for having me, Triana. It's been really great to chat to you. And, yeah, look forward to hearing more about The Latest in the future.
Huge thank you to 2010 CEO Jane Morley for joining us today on The Latest. If this podcast has raised any issues for you, you can contact QLife, which provides Australia-wide anonymous LGBTI peer support and referral for people wanting to talk about a range of issues, including sexuality, gender, bodies, feelings, or relationships. QLife services are free and they include both telephone and web chat support delivered by trained LGBTIQ plus community members from across the country. QLife is available every day from 3 p.m. to 9 p.m. in your local time zone, and you can visit qlife.org.au to find out more. If you'd like to suggest a person that you'd like to hear being interviewed on this very show, you can let us know about it by emailing info@lgbtiqhealth.org.au and put the word podcast in the subject line. I'm Triana Butler. Thanks so much for being here. I'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.